Welcome to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey Podcast.
I'm Lucia Kelly, expert at applied analysis, and I'm beginning to question the wisdom of barricading ourselves somewhere with so few exits.
And I'm Talia Franks, media critic, fanfic enthusiast, and I've never been more grateful for another man's deceit.
And we're here today for a Wibbly Wobbly Minisode!
Today we'll be talking about Flux, Chapter 4, Village of the Angels, which aired on November 21st, 2021. It was written by Maxine Alderton and Chris Chibnall and directed by Jamie Magnus Stone.
Reminder that time isn't a straight line. It can twist into any shape, and as such, this is a fully spoiled podcast. We might bring things in from later in the show, the comics, the books, the audio dramas, or even fan theories and articles.
With that out of the way, we mustn't get too bogged down by the order of things, so let's get in the TARDIS.
According to IMDb, the setting is Devon, November 1967. A little girl has gone missing. Professor Jericho is conducting psychic experiments, and in the graveyard there is one gravestone too many. Why is Mediton known as the Cursed Village, and what do the Weeping Angels want?
This is the one where the Weeping Angels are proper terrifying again, and we love it!
It's so good! Oh my gosh, this episode was so good. I'm glowing. I'm just...
One, I don't usually watch, and two, I don't usually like scary episodes or scary anything. I'm not really a horror person. I'm not really a thriller person, but this was fantastic. Also, that end scene, that transition... Chef's kiss.
Everything about this episode was chef's kiss. I only just watched it, so my brain is still kind of processing everything, but like everything about it was stunning. There are a few things that like don't quite add up, but I'm just going to put that down to Dr. Hooness. And also the fact that we still haven't got like all the answers yet. Like I'm waiting for the moment a fortnight from now where we will have all of Flux. However, I have a sneak theory.
Tell me your sneak theory.
My sneak theory is not everything's going to be answered in Flux, and this is going to extend into the specials.
Yeah, same. I think part of it's that, and I also think if we get all the answers, it won't be as good. I think part of the thing about Doctor Who that makes it good is having a little bit of mystery.
Definitely. What I really loved about this episode is that we, after the nonsense that we have been through with the Weeping Angels, is that we stripped it right back to what they were originally like, right? So the problem that we've had in the past is that for some freaking reason, people looked at the Weeping Angels and were like, I think we can add to that, which was not the go. The go was not to add more features to the Weeping Angels. They were perfect monsters all by themselves. They did not need all this extra stuff. But so what they've done is they've stripped it right back and then just given them more resources. They're just more powerful because of like, they've got more at their hand. It's not that they've got more things. It's that they can do more things. Which is the right way to go.
Yeah, and I think this is really indicative of what I've heard a lot of people say, which is that Stephen Moffat is very good at concepts. He is not so great at execution.
We're all just, I'm just going to address the elephant in the room so we can then kick it out forever. We're all thinking of Angels of Manhattan, okay? We're all thinking it. It's going to be there forever.
Yeah, it's funny that we're talking about Angels Take Manhattan because I just talked about on Into the Archives my favorite fanfic, which undoes Angels Take Manhattan. I'm not going to get into it because I just had a whole Into the Archives episode about it. But my favorite thing about that fanfic is that it basically makes it so that Amy and Rory aren't stuck in the past, along with the fact that it's an MCU crossover and a bunch of stuff happens with the Avengers. but the main thing that makes me love it is that Amy and Rory aren't stuck in the past anymore. And like Amy reunites with the 12th Doctor and it's really cute. And they get to know Bill and it's really cute. But that's besides.
Listeners, you should go and check out Into the Archives. You should go check that out and listen to Talia and their lovely guests talk all about fanfic. And in that particular episode, I keep saying Angels of Manhattan. Angels Take Manhattan.
Yeah. Angels Take Manhattan.
So yeah, we've mentioned it. We're now banishing it back into its dark, 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 dark cellar, where it shall never return again until we talk about it later.
No, but okay. So I think the great thing about this episode was that it did take some of those elements of the random powers that the angels had gotten in the past, but it actually made them interesting in that it worked them into the story. But the way that it worked them into the story wasn't quite so, I feel like the word I want to say is extra, but that's not quite it. It's more the way that the angels were in the story before was very,
well, overpowered.
Yeah.
Like they kept giving them more powers, which was not, like, that's not what makes the angels so terrifying. That isn't what makes them great monsters. What makes them great monsters, first of all, okay, what makes the angels such good monsters? First of all, they are both distinct and everyday, right? Like they have a very specific, particular look, but that image is taken directly from something that you will have seen 100,000 times before. So that's the first thing that makes them a good monster, is they've got a very distinctive but familiar shape.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is the quantum locking, which is just... So that's such a good concept. Plus the fact, and I adore this, they do this in every Angel episode, which it makes more sense now that they've introduced the idea of how angels work in regards to recordings and television and things, is that the audience observe. So we'll talk about this in more detail when we talk about Blink, but anytime the audience can see an angel, they also can't move, which is super, just makes my meta loving, my fourth wall breaking loving heart just buzz. That's,
I hadn't even thought of that. That's so cool. The other thing that makes me think of is how, like, a lot of the powers that they had in this episode, like, the angels already had, but instead of making these superpowers, like, overwhelming, they just made them tools that the angels are able to use, and the angels are still on, like, a level playing field. But at the same time, like, everything that they do is just so cool in this episode. Mm. Also, when the angel was lit on fire,
right?
Oh my gods, that was wild.
But this introduces the fascinating tidbit that now we know what you do to the image of the angel, the corresponding thing will happen to the angel that it is an image of. Which is very interesting. The third thing, of course, is the idea of destroying someone's life, but like displacing someone, and that is how they wreck your lives. I find it very interesting that the weeping angels are seen as malicious.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. They're just kind of existing. Like, they wreck people's lives, but not in, like, they don't kill anyone.
Well, actually, so my thing about this is they don't directly kill anyone, but I think by sending someone into the past, you're kind of killing them. And it's not just that, like, they age until before they're born. It's also the fact that getting sent to the past gets a lot of people dead. And it's not just the obvious of, like, if you send a Black person back to the past, they get lynched. It's also the fact that if you send someone to the past and they don't have context for the time and place where they are, they're going to act real suspicious. They could be hunted down for being a witch. They could be like just like treated terribly. Like they could be like put into one of those terrible mental institutions where they're like treated horribly and they die from that. They could be, or if they go back far enough, they could go to a place where they just don't speak the language and they can't communicate with anyone and they can't get a job and they starve to death. Like, I mean, like, there's just, the past is really terrible and like marginalizes so many different types of people that I feel like once someone is othered, it's really easy for them to just die. And so I feel like just by sending someone into the past, the angels are othering them and condemning them to death.
Mm. I mean, as Yaz said, you could be sent back to dinosaur times, which I think is a good transition to actually talk about the episode now that we've gone on and on about the angels for a fair while. Okay, I'm going to bring up something and I'm going to ask you very politely to be open to this. Dan is a good companion. He's a good companion. And I think people who continue to hate on him are being petty. That's not his fault. He's a good companion.
I think that Yaz and Dan didn't have enough to do this episode for me to be able to judge.
Okay, but consider, first of all, again, Dan with the common sense, down-to-earth thinking, recording the Suntarans in the Suntaran episode. Also, he saved Yaz's life this episode because he figured out that crossing the timeline would get you disintegrated because he threw the stick. Because he did some practical down on the ground. Just, he's good and he's looking out for Peggy. He's making sure he's trying to keep everyone calm and settled. I love his humor. It's so just.
Okay.
I really like Dan.
Dan isn't terrible. I don't hate Dan. Can we just talk about how in the next episode preview it says that they've been there for 3 years, which means like Yaz and Dan are probably like parenting Peggy, which is.
I know.
Just like my alternate AU thinking.
And God, Peggy needs some good parenting. Oh, her granduncle is a dick. He deserved to get turned to dust. Her great aunt is a bit, I don't know, we didn't really get enough of her characterization for me to be judgmental. But the great uncle deserved it.
Oh my God, and she knew he deserved it. She just, like they're dead-eyed, like cold world, like she was like, damn, sucks to be him.
I'm not a huge fan of the little Peggy actress, I'm gonna be honest. She was a bit wooden. It's not her fault, she's a kid, but like
I wasn't sure that bit was wooden or just Voldemort.
I'm also not sure if she was like told to be that way as well. Like, I'm not sure whether that is how she acted it or whether the director told her to be that way. Because she's given the description before we meet her that she's very sensible and like, was sort of given the impression that she's sort of wise beyond 2 years, a bit of an old soul. So like, is that just how they decided to play the character? Because that's not old soul. That's just a deeply unsettling child.
Well, Also, I think the impression that they're kind of trying to give is that no one knows how to deal with her because no one cares about children. the way the grand uncle plays it, he's like, she's 10 years old. How interesting can she be?
Right? I wanted to. I'm so glad that both Yaz and Dan were just like, what a dick. Like, both of them were like, we're going to find out what Peggy's interested in. Clearly, it's beyond you.
But there was another thing that I was going to say I was struck by in this episode. Yeah, just Yaz and Dan's arc was just so uninteresting. I forgot about it. Like, literally, when we went back to them, I put this in the Twitter thread. I was like, oh, OMG, I literally forgot that Yaz and Dan were doing something. I forgot that they were in this episode.
Their storyline was much more about them bonding as companions, which is going to be a precursor to the fact that they'll then spend 3 years together. So who knows what they're going to be like when we see them next, rather than them actually doing anything. Tell you who was doing things, though. The Doctor and Claire. And the angel that's in Claire as well. Rogue angel.
Oh my God. Oh my God, the rogue angel. Also, I love Jericho just being funky little academic scientist self.
Like, I love Jericho so much.
He needs to get his priorities a little bit in order, but I still love him for it.
I adored him. He was such a good little, I hope we see more of him. I would think so, because he's stuck. Oh my gosh, they're all stuck together. It's the Professor, Dan, Yaz, and Peggy all living their little cottagecore lives. I want 10,000 fix on my desk by Tuesday morning. Please and thank you. Yeah, no, I adored him when he was just sort of like, oh my gosh, can I take readings, please, while you mind meld with my previous patient? This is unprecedented.
Yeah. Also, another random thing before we just to make sure that we get this out of the way before we wrap up. There were chickens on that table, like pecking at the food, and then they were eating also on the table, and I was like, that's just so disgusting, that's so unsanitary. Why are people nasty on Maine?
I'm sure they cut all of the bit where Yaz and Dan furiously scrubbed every inch of the kitchen.
Like, what kind of sanitary, like, scrubbing products do they even have in 1901?
Bleach and vinegar. Also, before time runs out, Belle and Binda.
Oh my God. You love to see it.
You love to see the little Marvel post-credit scene. What was that, Jamie Magnus Stone? What was that choice?
Oh my God. I was so mad though, because we have commercials in the US. I know you don't have commercials in the UK. I don't know if you have them in Australia.
We do not.
Yeah. So in the US, we have commercials. And so what happened is we had a commercial right before the credits. So I was upset because I thought that we had a commercial just to watch the credits, because I didn't realize there was a Marvel style post-credit scene. And I was just so pissed off. But then I was like, oh no, wait, like, there's actual footage here. Also, like, the music wasn't in the post-credit scene, which I saw in the credits, which I saw someone point out is maybe because the doctor's hearts aren't beating anymore because she's a weeping angel.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. So, first of all, Azure knows Belle now. Like, Azure definitely caught that Belle was behind that. So I'm worried for Belle.
Yeah, I'm also worried for Belle because she threw herself on the ground with a fierceness, especially because she's supposed to be pregnant.
Right? Belle does not seem to, like, Belle's not waiting for anyone, including her own baby.
Yeah, like, I think this is another way that the show, and this is a problem that Doctor Who has in general, and I don't think is just, I think is particularly obvious in Chibnall's era because he's made an effort to be inclusive, but his effort has not been the greatest. But I mean, he's made an effort where other showrunners have not made as much of an effort. But even when efforts have been made in the past, like, inclusion is not Doctor Who's strong point. It's very surface level because it's like, okay, there's a pregnant person who does not act pregnant. Okay, there's like someone like Ryan who has a disability. He has dyspraxia, but it's really easy to forget that he has dyspraxia. I did see a really great thread by someone who I completely forget who it was. It's lost to the realms of Twitter, about how they have dyspraxia and they really identified with Ryan because there's a lot of really small ways in which Ryan's dyspraxia shows up. But I think it's so subtle that it's really easy for other people to forget. And so it's kind of like, it's very surface level. It's very, we're going to tell you that this person is this particular way, but we're not really going to follow it up. It's something that is a real problem because it's like, actually, Brenna on Queer Archive was talking about this too with War of the Centaurans, because Dan, like when he like goes up to like on the Centauran ship, he's fit. Like, he's not fit in the sense, he's not cute, but he's fit in the sense of like, he's able, like, he's like in very good shape. He's able to just like go, 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 go. And so like, he could easily be swapped out for like a 20 something year old guy. And so like, he does not act like an older man or like, you know, like, so when you can, I mean, like, there are obviously older men who are in like good enough shape like that, but like, there's a lot of people who aren't. So like, if you can swap out someone completely, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's just very surface level.
Yeah. I wish to state for the record that I do find Dan a little cute. Not all the way, but a little.
Oh my God, no. No. He's not cute. I decided to torture myself and look at Dan and look at like, see what was on Dan fix on AO3, mostly because I wanted to see if there were any Dan Venista fix yet, because that's my ship.
I don't like that at all. They're mates, they're buddies. No. It's man's best friend, not man's best lover.
No, I ship it. I'm definitely putting it into fix that I'm writing in the future. But I saw some Dan 13 fix, which I do not like at all.
Nope, definitely not. Anyway. So, closing notes. Firmly fabulous.
Firmly fabulous.
Firmly fabulous.
Very firmly fabulous. This was such a good episode. This was so good.
I kind of just want to watch it immediately again.
This has been the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey Podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this adventure with us through space and time.
You can find us elsewhere on the internet, on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram as @WibblyPod. Follow us for more Wibbly Wobbly content.
You can find out more information about us and our content on wibblywobblytimeywimey.net and full transcripts for episodes at wibblywobblytimeywimey.net/transcripts.
If you'd like to get in touch, you can send us an email at wibblywobblytimeywimeypod@gmail.com.
Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and other platforms, as it helps other people find us and our content.
Special thanks to our editor, Owen Elphick, who has been a vital member of the Wibbly Wobbly team.
That's all for now. Catch you in the time vortex.